welcome. Everyone but me. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated and totally medicated island chained nation of New Zealand in the sunny slave South Pacific, where we're all bathed in extra UV radiation, which makes the weed stronger. My very special guest today is Jimmy Hunt. He's an author of an upcoming book, which will be released in June, called A Bit Mental, and he's hosting a dance party kind of water slide thingy, I think. In fact, we'll let him speak for himself. Jimmy, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're all about, because this is a little bit of a promo spot that we're bringing you on here, which is not normally what we do on the show, so I hope you feel lucky.
Oh, I do. Thank you very much for having me on. Basically, what I do with my friend Dan Drupstein is we have a charity in New Zealand, and it's called Live More Awesome. And basically what we do is we help people with depression get better through natural non-drug means. And we do that by inspiring them to get up, get out, and then we've got ways that we can help them after they're inspired. With natural, just lifestyle changes. And so basically what we're doing on top of that is trying to raise awareness about depression in New Zealand. Like, as you know, we've got an epidemic in this country of depression, which is just, it's baffling, really. You know, we've got it pretty good down here, and yet our rates are the worst. Our suicide rates are the worst, our depression rates are the worst, and so we're trying to do something about that.
Well, see, in the United States, as I mentioned before, we were chatting on Skype, that suicide has now overtaken all other causes of death. It's now the number one cause of death in America. And it's unbelievable, the drugs that they put people who are depressed on. It's like, are you feeling upset? Yeah. They don't ask you, are you satisfied in your job career? They don't ask you, are your friends supportive? They don't ask you if your family situation is okay. They ask you, are you willing to take this drug?
Absolutely. And that's one of the big things that I write about in my book, like you said, coming out in June, but also what we advocate with our charity. And that is the fact that drugs are made by massive pharmaceutical companies, and they actually have no benefit, vested interest in getting you well. They would like to keep you on a drug forever and keep paying them that money. But not only that, is just, it's very, very hard to get off them. The side effects are terrible and they don't help you. When the truth is, if you can just change some of your lifestyle factors, you can help yourself better, which is what we advocate.
Well, could you take us up with some examples, maybe some people that have been helped in some way through changing their lifestyles? And we also have your co-organizer here, Gilad Mir, as well. Gil, are you able to turn your webcam on, mate?
Yeah, just a moment.
Right. Well, while he does that, I'll tell you about me and the way that I learned to be able to help other people with that. And that was that what happens is that your depression is caused by a chemical imbalance. And so the doctors go in and they go, cool, you've got a chemical imbalance. Here's some drugs. But the problem with that is that the drugs, all they do is mask the symptoms of depression. They don't actually cure the cause of depression. And so what we need to do is go and cure the cause. And I went to a whole bunch of doctors who told me that I should take some pills. And I didn't want to. And it wasn't until my sixth doctor, my psychologist, and he said to me, you have a chemical imbalance that's causing your depression. And I said, do we have to take some drugs to fix that? And he's like, no, we can just fix that by changing your lifestyle. And I was like what? And so he said to me, you have too much cortisol and not enough serotonin. And cortisol is your stress hormone, and serotonin is your happy drug. And that's basically the imbalance. And he said, with cortisol, the way that you get cortisol out of your body is through crying or peeing. And so he looked at me and he said, so your new motto is pee your way through the day. And I prescribe you 2 liters of water a day. And that will get all that stress hormone out of your body. It's like, okay, like, cool. And then on the other side, the serotonin. The serotonin is produced in the gut by your liver. And in order to make the serotonin, it needs protein. And it only makes makes serotonin from 3 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon. And so basically he says you need to have 30 grams of protein within 30 minutes of getting up to maximize your serotonin production over the day. And so that pops that up, brings your cortisol down, balances you out. And there's a few other little stress things and lifestyle tips that he gave me, but those were the two of the main things that helped me get better from depression just by changing my lifestyle.
See, now this is something that I do find very interesting, is that they'll call it a chemical imbalance, and for some doctors the chemical imbalance can only be corrected by chemicals, yet whereas for others it's actually just naturally balancing out the body that can stop these conditions from really kind of plaguing your life. Gil, you're there, aren't you? Welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Have you got anything to contribute to the conversation here, or are you just kind of sitting in?
I'm actually more just listening because, I'm still learning. I mean, I've been through my ups and downs as well, cried myself to sleep many, many nights in the course of my life. But I just remember the one incident which I'm actually seeing being repeated over and over again in youth and younger people, is that I went through a bit of a tough time when I was about 20. Naturally occurring tough time, basic challenge in life. And of course, my mom being worried took me to the doctor, and the doctor wrote a piece of paper, and that piece of paper entailed the use of using Paroxetine, or Arapex, which is the brand name. I don't think I've ever been the same since I took those for that 6 or 7 month period. I've never really quite, I feel like anxiety's been part of my life ever since I took those things, and I don't think I should have been on them in the first place. I'm seeing this happen with 18, 19, 20-year-old kids all the time now, and I just really don't think it's right, because simple things like going out, having fun, exercising, meeting people, enjoying communal spaces is not something I ever hear doctors saying to these kids, but rather they say you need to see someone, you've got this issue, you need drugs, such. And to me, that's a massive, massive no-no. I've seen people go on downward spirals as a result, not have secondary checkups after they're given these brain-altering substances. You know, like, cool, assume, here you go, here's the chemical, it'll fix you up. But suddenly they're on a downward spiral, and as happened to someone I know, they ended up committing suicide about 6 months down the track, and the doctor having sort of no knowledge of his downward spiral.
See, this is something that I also wanted to iterate during this conversation, is that if you look at the listed side effects, they come with these little pullouts, and they're folded up many, many, many times, kind of like I don't know how they manage to fold these things out. Maybe the warning labels are sort of a practice in origami for some reason. You're capable of unfurling and unfolding them like an ancient Dead Sea scroll or something. They just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger with a list of side effects that just makes the mind reel. And you think to yourself, okay, here's my symptoms. I'm not feeling very happy. Here's the possible side effects. Kill people that are close to me. Kill myself. debilitating stomach cramps, memory loss, liver failure, kidney failure, and these are just a few of the bad ones. You know, there's so many side effects, and every single time when I've seen people get prescribed these medications, the doctors don't know these side effects, and if they do, they keep their fracking mouth shut about it.
And you know why they keep their mouth shut? Because they get kickbacks on prescribing them.
It's true. It's a financial incentive. I had Nicola Grace from Health Freedom New Zealand. She said that, don't quote me on this, or her for that matter, but New Zealand doctors are capable of receiving up to $125,000 in kickbacks from the pharmaceutical industry per year before having to declare anything. Something around there, right? And that's often more than their yearly income anyway. So it's actually really just a money spinner, and we're the ones being spun. They're the ones getting the money.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the program that you actually wish to promote here. You're having some kind of event coming up soon?
Yeah, so we've got our charity Live More Awesome, and you can go check out what we do at livemoreawesome.com. And like I said, we put a whole bunch of stuff together in order to help people with depression through natural means. But we're having a fundraiser at the moment. And here in New Zealand, when you have a fundraiser, you have a sausage sizzle or a charity golf day or something like that. But we've gone a little bit more awesome for our charity fundraiser. And we are building the world's biggest water slide.
How long is that water slide?
That water slide is over 650 meters long. And for our American friends, that's 2,133 feet.
33, eh? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have this thing about the number 33. It always comes up every single day for me. I don't know why, don't know how, but it does. And I also wanted to think about this. Like, you could be sliding for half a kilometre. Where exactly are you building this? Is it like on the side of some gigantic mountain range or something of that nature? What the hell's going on here?
We're basically, we put it out there on Facebook, and when we were first concepting the idea, and simply said, look, We need a piece of land that that will fit this slide. And Gil over here put it out on his, and we ended up with a friend of his, and they have this piece of land that has water at the top. It has a basin at the bottom and is just a perfect gradient to send us hurtling down the hill at breakneck speeds.
Okay. Well, something's bound to give. I mean, if you're not feeling very good by the time you start down the water slide, by the time you get to the end, you'll be so exhilarated, you'll forget you're depressed, right? Is that the methodology here?
Yeah, well, it's actually got a few pieces of methodology. One, yes, that's exactly true. Like, who can't get excited about the world's biggest water slide? Really. It's just a happy thing. But it's got some science behind it too, in terms of, first of all, vitamin D is a big thing that helps people with depression. So actually getting outside into the sun. Then one of the other big things is having a goal and something to look forward to. That's what you find with a lot of depressed people, is that they've got no ambition anymore. They've lost that. They need to have something to look forward to. And so we're simply giving them something to look forward to. Another part of getting over being depressed is having a support network and having people that you can talk to. And so what we're getting is just everyone volunteering to come and help us, come and be involved. They're joining our online community, and they're all talking with each other and helping each other get better. And so not only is it a fun way to raise some money for the charity, it's got some benefits for the average person too.
Mm. And I'm particularly pleased that the charity money isn't going to be going to the big pharmaceutical companies like all the rest of the charities surrounding depression do. That really Fs me off.
Yeah. The same, I mean, I did a thing last year called Lilo the Waikato, and to translate that into Americanese, Basically, I paddled an air mattress down the longest river in New Zealand. And they did a story on me on the basically the 7 o'clock primetime show, Close Up. And in the ads of my story, they had a woman standing down next to a river saying, "Are you depressed? You should buy some of this drug."
They had
gone and sold that spot.
Well, guys, unfortunately, we've only got 15 seconds left in this segment. Do you want to join us for one more segment, another 15 to 12 minutes, if you can spare it, because I know that you're very busy organising this.
Sure, we can make that happen.
All right, cool. Well, we're coming to break now. Ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy Hunt and Gilad Mir from, what's the website again? Something awesome?
LiveMoreAwesome.com.
LiveMoreAwesome.com. Okay, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere, and don't worry, we definitely will be back. Don't be sad about it. Back in a moment.
But I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles. But I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual.
Welcome back.
Incredible. So until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible.
That's the adults only Teletubbies theme song. I'm just joking.
Have you noticed, Gil? Gilad Mir, I don't know if anybody knows who he is, but if you go to shiftevents.co.nz, he puts on he was helping another guy named Craig Koenig put on these great parties called shift parties. And I remember the first night at a shift party that I ever did, I was filming for them, and I drank too much very, very quickly and was passed out by about, I think, maybe before midnight. And there were all these really nice people who were helping me, getting me water and helping, you know, moving me around from position to position and that kind of thing. And I didn't know why all these people were suddenly so nice and friendly and helping me and what have you. And even though I was supposed to be there being paid to film it and everything like that, Gil actually gave me some money for a taxi and popped me in one and sent me on home. And then still paid me for the gig afterwards anyway. So that's the kind of man he is. And I haven't I haven't had quite an experience like that at any dance party ever in my life. It's just so loving, so caring, so cool. So it's natural that he'd probably get involved in a project like the most awesome water slide ever. Now,
thank you.
Getting on to the topics here, we really do need to plug again. The event, so Jimmy, if you would, and then I've got a question to ask you.
Excellent. Well, basically we're raising money for the charity, so we are selling tickets to this event. We've got top New Zealand DJs, musicians playing. We've got entertainment, we've got food, and all that sort of carry on. And
could you give us some of the names of the DJs and entertainers?
No, we can't. Just yet, it's a secret lineup at the moment. But if you go over to worldsbiggestwaterslide.com, you can click through there and go to our Indiegogo page. So it's indiegogo.com/worldsbiggestwaterslide, and that's where we're raising our money. And if I have a look right now, we have managed to get 29,084 dollars raised so far, and we've still got a few weeks left on that, and so people can buy tickets and come along. And if they are not in the Auckland area over the 23rd and 24th of February, they can just go on there and either donate, or they can buy a rubber ducky, because we're having a rubber ducky race down the thing, and they'll win a prize with that. So that's what we're doing over there.
Is it going to be like a rally, like you get timed from the how long it takes you to get down, or is the water slide so wide as well that you can actually have people coming down it simultaneously and like going past each other and stuff?
No, so basically think of it like a bobsled track. If you guys go over to our Facebook page, Live More Awesome, I do a tour of the slide from our first day of construction. And so basically it's about a meter wide and it's about 400 millimeters deep and built like a bobsled track. So there will be timed runs on the day. So we'll find out who can go the fastest over the course. And we'll also have a speed camera there too that will tell us just how fast you're going down the bottom of the straight.
Okay, now in terms of it's being the biggest water slide in the world, are you going to have somebody from Guinness Book of World Records there or something like that?
Guinness being the lovely, useless pricks that they are, do not...
Well, sorry, Jimmy, you just cut out there. I think maybe we're being hacked by Guinness. Could you say that again?
Better? No, I'm lost you completely. Maybe that's my fault.
Oh, no, wait, there we go. You're sweet.
All right, cool. Sorry, what was your question?
You were talking about Guinness and how they're not going to be there.
Yeah, so basically Guinness don't have a record. They don't feel like making a record for water slides. And so in our own research, the current world record for the world's biggest water slide is about 350 metres, and our one is 650 metres. So we're almost doubling it.
Right. So Guinness Book of World Records has records for a guy who can bend a frying pan in half, but they don't have records for water slides.
Yeah, we're petitioning them at the moment to get off their ass and come out here.
Yeah, you got to love big organisations, eh? All right.
Yep. That was the
Speaking of which, we just cracked in an article. One of my listeners posted it in the Vinnie Eastwood Show Facebook group today from Psychology Today. Physical illnesses may soon be labelled mental disorders. All right. Dig this. This is the new DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, which I know you don't like very much, Jimmy, and that's because, well, it's evil and crazy. Criteria number one, disproportionate thoughts about the seriousness of their symptoms. Criteria two, a high level anxiety about their symptoms or health. Or criteria three, devoting excessive time and energy to their symptoms of health concerns. So, if you are concerned about your health, you're mental. If you are seriously concerned about your health, you're mental. If you think about your health on a constant basis, you're mental. That's what these people are saying. Do you have any idea how many drugs you could prescribe to anybody who's even remotely concerned about their... Oh, you're concerned about your health? Here, have something that kills you. This will save you. And I don't like the fact that in these manuals here, the DSM 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or whatever, they keep bringing it out like new additions, like for some reason humanity's capable of manifesting like an extra 50 different mental disorders per edition, right? And I found out that the way that they've get these conditions... I'm apparently cutting out a little bit. Apparently, the way they get these conditions in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual in there is by a show of hands, right? No microscopes, no blood tests, no double-blind trials, just a whole group of people who are financially connected to the industry saying, hey, do you want to be able to prescribe drugs from this thing that we made up? Yeah. Okay, guys. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll just say goodbye to you then, and I think we can probably get this sorted else time. Sorry about this. Really, really sorry. And also apologize to the listeners. Technical glitches, that kind of thing. They can really be pretty nasty. All right. Well, they've said pretty much everything they need to say anyway. All right. So I'll just continue to rant. Because this is something that did actually affect me massively, particularly before I started becoming a radio show host, ladies and gentlemen. I keep getting reconnected by the studio. I don't know what's going on. Can you hear me, AFR? Hello? Hello? Can you hear me? You know, some indication would be nice. I don't know if anybody else on listening onto the airwaves can hear me. No audio there at all either. Okay. Technical issues. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know what's going on. Don't know if you can hear me. In fact, I know that you can't. Okay, never mind. I don't have any other programs open. Nothing should be messing this up like it is. Okay. Anyway, I am recording this, so it'll at least be up elsewhere. And I apologize again to the listeners. Frack. Because this is just terrible listening, isn't it? When somebody's saying, oh, I'm sorry. There's technical issues. I can't do anything about it. It makes me appear quite retarded. Okay. Well, look at it this way. At least I'm not as retarded as the psychotic psychiatrists who vote on whether or not somebody's got a disease as opposed to leeching up some kind of verification on a scientific basis. That's pretty sad anyway, isn't it? Okay. I'm being told that my breakup on my voice is really, really bad. I don't know what to do about it, but here's an article for you anyway from the New Zealand Herald. Plea: give us a miracle drug. Why don't people pray to God anymore for miracles? You know, they pray to the psychiatric industry as if they are God. They think of themselves like that anyway. Andrea Murphy says Solaris has let her resume a normal life. Without it, she would be dead. Daniel Webby and son Wu, 6, age... says Pharmac must ensure people get life-saving treatments. Now, this is about blood pressure and stuff of that nature. It's not actually specifically about psychiatric drugs, of course. Andrea Murphy says her life has been saved from a killer blood disease by an expensive miracle drug and is pleading for Pharmac to approve state funding for it and 7 others at a cost of $4 million. As opposed to finding some kind of herbological or naturopathic solution, which costs a heck of a lot less, doesn't require huge quantities of research and verification, and also putting money into the pockets of the gargantuan pharmaceutical industry that profit off your fracking death. Okay? That's really the problem here with our society, is that we expect other people to solve our problems for us, instead of us actually trying to understand the problems we're facing and solving them ourselves. Okay? That's the real problem I've found. Everybody's looking for some kind of savior. And I've got news for you. Nobody's gonna save you. You really do have to save yourself. Take some personal responsibility. Have a look at your life. Is your lifestyle in some way connected to what's happening inside your body and inside your mind? Absolutely. There are many, 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 many ways to improve yourself without the use of drugs. Okay? If you've got heart problems or whatever, even the HB extract and things of that nature work really, really well. It's quite sad when you think about the reality of it, of just how driven society is to have this savior mentality. And the irony is that the people we go to save us from things that are a real problem are usually the ones who caused the problem in the first place. And there's nothing we can do to really change that fact. However, there is an opportunity here to recognize the truth that these people are not out to save your life. They are there to profit off of destroying it. The rule of thumb is, everybody who's out there to do one thing, especially in the case of officialdom, is in fact doing pretty much the direct opposite. Okay? If a government says we're here to protect your freedoms, oh, okay, well, they must be here to destroy my freedoms. If a doctor is there, I'm here to make you healthy, he's actually there to destroy your health. If there is some kind of, I don't know, road worker who says, I'm here to improve your roading systems and everything like that, he's there to actually mess up your roading system so that you continue to need him to fix up all the stuff that he doesn't do properly. We'll be right back at thevinnieeswoodshow.com.
I got some so-called friends. They'll smile right to my face.
Yes, they do.
All when my back is turned.
They like this break chemtrails all over the place. Without a trace. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The final segment of the first hour here. I'm supposed to be having on David Griffin from Exopolitics UK on in the next segment, but it does not look like he's there. So instead, we're going to do something much more fun. We're going to have callers. So if the topics of depression or scumbaggery interests you, and you would like to speak with me on the air, the number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Okay. So, there was something I did want to reiterate, and I'm not sure if people heard this when I said it in the final segment, but here's the article. From Psychology Today, physical illnesses may soon be labeled mental disorders. And there's three criteria for that. Criteria one, disproportionate thoughts about the seriousness of their symptoms. We just call that hypochondria, don't we? Criteria two, a level of anxiety about their symptoms of health. If you're sick, isn't it kind of healthy to have a little bit of anxiety about it and want to get something done about it? And criteria three, devoting excessive time and energy to their symptoms or health concerns. So if you've got cancer and you're going to, let's say, a hospital or something like that, and you're trying to cure yourself on a constant basis so that you don't die, that's a mental disorder. These people are crazy. This is what the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, which had no scientific evidence whatsoever, okay, you ask a real doctor, somebody who actually has, you know, pathology and that kind of training about all of this, you say, okay, is there any scientific evidence that's verifiable about any of this kind of stuff? They go, none, doesn't exist. First call up, Nathan in the 480 area code, I believe. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, Benny?
I'm good, man. You're a bit crackly in the background there. You got bacon cooking on the stove or something?
Driving, and I was trying to pull over by the time you picked me up there, but I'll pull over as soon as I can. I guess the scumbaggery and the depression is because we don't have a solution, right? We all can't figure out at the end of the day what to do about it. And so anytime I call in, I try to put out the right of self-determination in international law. And the book called Law of Nations by Vattel. And that's the current approach I'm taking to see if there's any possibility that maybe I can gain immunities in business affairs, maybe even come up with my own constitution, to be able to complement relations rather than butt heads with relations. So I just kind of wanted to put that out. I don't know if you guys can hear me very well or not. I apologize about that.
I can hear you just fine, man. When you're in the media sphere, what I notice a lot of people say about
radio talk show hosts or the news is that show us the solutions, tell us the solutions. Well, interestingly enough, that's not actually a journalist's job. A journalist's job is to tell you what the problems are, and you're the one who's supposed to come up with the solutions. You know, everybody's playing their part sort of thing. And I think what is really the matter with society is these things that you say. You know, people don't really have their own kind of constitution, their own rules that are unwavering, unbending. And it's, essentially, it's kind of like having a lack of moral fiber is indeed rewarded. Usually with money or promotions or things of that nature. And being a person of conscience who is dictated, essentially, by doing the right thing, they're the ones who get hated. They're the ones who get fired. They're the ones who get discriminated against. The whole world's freaking upside down, isn't it, Nathan?
Yes, and we've got to come out of that. Like, for instance, I'm a landscaper and I'm self-employed and, you know, I've got a little bit of history with, you know, like a DUI from, marijuana, you know, and, you know, it's probably on my record and I'm not to say that I I'm not going to let that prevent me getting a job, but I don't really want to get a job. I enjoy working by myself and being able to listen to podcasts all day. It might make my wife mad that I don't bring home as much money as we possibly could, but solutions like aquaponics, which, you know, it's like you got to convince somebody who has a pool to drain their pool, fill it up with a couple thousand gallons of water, just in the deep end and put some tilapia in there and make the rest of the area of the pool, you know, their food that, you know, and it's a great idea. It's going to save everybody money. You know, your $350 some odd dollar, you know, grocery bill a month can really be chopped down and you can actually be connected to your food source. That's a solution. So I'd like to put that out in the air. It's very hard for me to convince somebody to do that, you know, with their pool because, you know, they'd rather just dump money into it so that they can go and swim sometimes in the summer, you know. Go ahead.
That's funny, Nathan. My neighbor has a pool, and I've been here for 6 months. The summer 6 months, and they clean their pool every second day, and they've used the pool once,
right?
During the time in the summer when you would most likely be using your pool, they've used it once. You know what uses their pool more than the people who own it and clean it every day? The ducks, the local ducks. Right. They actually sit, they fly in. And just kind of like paddle around in their pool kind of thing, and they're like, ah, it's nice and clean. Ah. Even saw them having sex in there and kind of thing. I hope they clean the pool after that. But I don't get it. I would love it if these pools would be used for something useful. I mean, it's just, have you noticed, Nathan, in your own life, how much we spend maintaining things that we don't need or use?
Every day I'm trying to get it to where I can start making edible landscapes, you know, for customers. But they'll sit there and, you know, play the devil's advocate, you know, just because they can, you know. It's like, why would I want to do that, you know? Well, you know, why you got to be a dick? Pardon my French. Didn't mean to say that. Anyways,
I think it's appropriate, but I must apologize to the affiliates and FCC regulators. But anyway, continue.
If the money goes away and things, you know, we can't afford food anymore, you know, it's going to be too late. you know, right now is the time that people need to have the fire underneath them, you know, propelling them to do things like that. You know, so everything that I'm doing in my life extracurricularly is involved in volunteerism in my community. There is an actual website. I don't know if you mind me putting it out. It's oh, yeah. local here for me. It's called gardenpool.org. And they have demonstrated an aquaponic system in their pool, and they have continued on the process, doing it for other people who decide to take the plunge into that. It works. Whether you've got a pool or not, even if you have a 300 square foot backyard or a balcony, you know, aquaponics is really the way to go. So as far as agriculture, the old ways of agriculture aren't necessary any longer. We can take back the control of our food source, if we so want to. As well as energy, I'm sure, and everything else, if the general public so wants to. But it always comes down to the acquiescence, and that's why I mentioned the Law of Nations initially, and the right of self determination. Because I don't go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Continue. So just finish your point, please.
Okay, I just want, what it comes down to is like, it's either we got to make up our own little countries and or constitutions through this right of self-determination. I don't even know if that's even possible, but that's some arguments that are being made lately. It's what the founding fathers of America supposedly did. Either that, you know, or it's anarchy, or it's somewhere in the middle. And I would love to be able to just hear more people talking and doing and having connected discourse, trying to figure out, you know, what the answer for that is, what the solution for that is, where we can do that. And I guess it really, when it comes down to it, it's just practically applying all.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, and Nathan, thank you for your call. At the end of the day, it's not about the masses. You know what the masses have changed throughout history? Nothing. They've never, ever, ever changed anything. The majority of people have never been involved in something that makes the world a better place. It's always the small, determined minority, in other words, the individuals, like you, Nathan, that make the true difference. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, it is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from AmericanFreedomRadio.com all over the USSA. Now, I would love to take some callers during this hour, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Now, what are the topics we were discussing today? I mean, just talking about pills, we've been talking about aquaponics, we've been talking about scumbaggery, and I wanted to kind of tell a personal story, at least of mine, you know, like what kind of happened to me, and the reason why I really got into this is I was depressed working at a job, right? My boss was a psycho, and I don't think that's an understatement. He really was a person without conscience, and definitely wasn't the brightest cookie in the world either. I remember one time he got us these new printed shirts and things like that, and he says, oh, this isn't that Chinese-made stuff, you know, this is really good quality or whatever, and I was like, check the label. Yep. Made in China. This dude actually called me up. There's one time in particular that I remember, although it's not an isolated incident. At 9:30 at night, on a Friday, while I was at my mate's place, having a few beers, as you do, and he told me to get up, get off the couch, find a pen and paper, and jot down the number of a client to call on Monday. Why didn't you just tell me that on Monday? Why did you invade my personal space? Why are you making my life a living hell? Why can I not escape from this? That was the thing that was going through my mind the vast majority of the time. You'll be surprised how depressed it makes you when somebody else is forcing you to work without pay. You know? It was horrible. I was getting really, really dependent on weed. I couldn't go to work without being stoned. And I was just like, man, this is just not healthy. This is just not healthy. I had to travel in my car for ages and ages and to go to clients and suburbs halfway across the fracking city. And it was really ticking me off. I remember one time my car got towed because my boss bought me a beer, and before we'd finished the beer, the zoning had changed on where I'd parked my car, and it got towed. So, you know, it's like it's a parking zone up till 4 p.m., and he bought me a drink at like 5 to 4, and I didn't realize this, and then by the time I got back to it, she'd gone. And then the $100 or so that I'd made at work that day, I had to instead pay to get my fracking car out of the impound lot so I could continue to work tomorrow. This is what working's like, man. It sucks. And other people put you in positions that you don't want to be in. And at the time, I was learning about scumbaggery and watching, on average, maybe 2 documentaries per day. Absorbing an inordinate and quantitative amount of knowledge and information. And all this knowledge and information was far more interesting than the jobs that I was doing, and I believe far more important too. And because I was traveling such long distances to go get money and all of that kind of stuff, it made what happened next even more irritating. Came back, and they tell me, oh, Vinny, we're going to give you a new set of leads that are a bit closer to you. And I was like, okay, cool. Why? And they go, well, because the other lady that we were giving these leads, she just doesn't want to do them. And I was like, hold on a second. Where does she live? Oh, she lives halfway across the city. And where are these leads? Oh, about just down the road from you, Vinny. Maybe a couple of hundred meters from your fracking doorstep. You could have walked to these things, and instead we'll give it to somebody halfway across the city, and we'll give you leads from halfway across the city in a different direction. I was just like, you fracking scum. And that was it, man. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. I called up my friend John Eisen. I think kind of my mentor sort of thing into this conspiracy realm. He does this magazine here, Uncensored, at uncensored.co.nz, uncensored.co.nz. And I said to him, you know, man, I really want to quit my job. And I kind of didn't know what the hell I was going to do. Once quitting that job. And he says, well, does it feel right? I was like, you know what? Yeah. does feel right to stop working for scum who treat me like trash. It does feel right to go out with my camera and start covering the real issues. And that's exactly what I did. Caller on the line here, 214 area code. Would you just be so kind as to give us your first name?
Hey, Vinny, my name is Max.
Hey, Max, where are you calling from, man?
I'm from Texas, Dallas area.
Oh, you got to love that. What's up? What's on your mind today, my brother?
Well, I'm a professional personal trainer, and I just wanted to talk about scumbaggery in the realm of basically deceptive marketing practices.
Okay, well, that's a pretty broad topic. Go for your life.
Yeah, it is. Basically, I mean, this is really on my heart because every time I go into the store, there's food presented to be healthy, and it's just, it's incredibly deceptive, and everything that's labeled as no fat and no trans fat, they're telling you what's not in the food. They could also say it's no plutonium or no granite, and that's also true. But, man, I'm telling you, I see day in and day out people trying to be healthy and do the right thing. But our knowledge base on what is actually healthy is just so perverted, and it's due to the media, and it's due to advertising. And these companies, all they have to do is package something in white or green, and they put words on it like true or simple or lean or, you know, words like that, and people will just buy it and trust that it's healthy when actually the companies controlling these things are the same ones who are genetically modifying 70% of the food in the store.
Mm-hmm. You ever gone into a supermarket and before you buy something, read the label on it? Like the full label?
I do all the time and it makes me furious.
I've done that once or twice and it just occurred to me, my God, I can't eat anything in this whole place.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm a fitness professional, and I work with people on their diets and help people lose weight and get stronger and all these things. And
can I ask you on that point, as a fitness professional, do you tell people what they should have in their food, or do you tell people what they shouldn't have in their food, or both? Because the labeling and the marketing only tells you what's not in there.
Right. It really depends entirely upon the person. And what we tend to say, the good trainers, that is, we say try to stay around the perimeter of the store where you know exactly what's in it, like the vegetables and the fruits. Now, there is a large margin of ambiguity there because, you know, you don't know if they're genetically modified and things like that. But generally speaking, you try to stay around the outer rim of the store where things that are grown, things that you can recognize, like this is a plant, this was an animal. You try to stay away from the things in the middle of the store that are in boxes and they're prepackaged and they're super processed. So I don't know if that answered your question.
I'm not sure exactly what I was trying to get at, but what I've found is interesting with marketing. Marketing is the art of telling people what they want to hear and keeping silent when they ask questions about things you don't want to tell them, that you don't want them to know. And as a result, I think it's no surprise that our water, goodness knows how many chemicals are in the water now. I mean, I watched this documentary just recently, Max, called The Great Culling, the first episode, Water, that the filmmakers sent me, and they had this little electrode tested for the fluoride. And I was thinking, how much else could we test that's in the water, you know? How much uranium, plutonium, lithium, SSRI drugs, human waste, and things of that nature are also in there, you know? It's like if you're testing for one thing, you'll only find that one thing. And when you're talking about health, what's going in and what's coming out are just as important. And I've got a real problem with the fact that everybody's so unhealthy, including myself, and that when I try to do something about it, it seems like all these obstacles come out to attack me and to prevent me from doing the right thing by myself. And it's I think it becomes like you have to surround yourself with people who are knowledgeable about the bad things to identify them, and also people who are knowledgeable about the good things to identify them. Have you found that?
It's very difficult, Vinny, and you bring up an excellent point, and that's really at the source of my argument here. Like, if you're trying to get healthy and do the right thing and lose weight and live a longer, more full, and more beneficial life, it's very difficult unless you make it a hobby, basically, because there is so, you have to dig so far and wade so deep into the information to figure out what actually is good and what actually is not. And I can go to a library and grab two books that exactly contradict one another on how you should lose weight. And going back, I'm 31 years old. When I was in grade school, we had the food pyramid, and at the base of the food pyramid, it recommended that you get 6 to 11 servings of grains per day. And grains, you know, being carbohydrates, include things like potatoes and bread. And back then, we thought bread was this thing that should make up the foundation of your diet. When actually,
whereas the problem is, it's all gluten based, sticks to the tissues inside your small intestine, and start to ferment. And so it's like you've got an alcohol fermentation process going on in your gut, and for some reason, doing that 12 to 14 times a day is going to be healthy for you, right?
Exactly. It's actually a roadmap to type 2 diabetes, which segues into your first discussion with your first guest. When you go to a doctor and they say, okay, your blood sugar is really high, but not high enough where I can prescribe you something yet, so come back in 6 months. And so you come back in 6 months and you went from pre-diabetic to full-blown type 2 diabetes, and then they say, okay, here's this drug, take it, you're going to be on it for the rest of your life. They don't say, okay, you have type 2 diabetes, you need to change your lifestyle right now. This is totally reversible. You can fix this. They don't say that. They say, here's a drug. Take it. This is your life now.
You know what I really hate, Max, is the mainstream medical apparatus. They prevent, sue, shut down anybody who says the word, and it's the greatest word in the world, really, cure. If you say the word cure, you are a dangerous, lying individual. It makes me sick.
Yeah, it's really sad. I used to believe that there weren't those evil entities out there who would put that kind of a thing down. But I mean, now I do. I mean, it's pretty plain when you hear guys like Bernard Mendez and Andrew Bishago talk about what they do and how the oil companies basically try to keep it from coming out, and nobody's really interested in researching Tesla's real discoveries so we can get power for free. No one's interested in those types of things. I mean, think about how much personal electronic devices, such as your phone — I'm holding a phone right now talking to you — how much these things have revolutionized and totally changed the basis of our society is in just the last 20 years. Think about that. Imagine, and it's a phone, it's a communication device. Imagine the impact it would have on our world if a new mode of transportation, or we didn't have to worry about paying for energy anymore. Imagine that. It's amazing.
Well, technology is the source of the solution to many problems, but also, in a lot of cases, it is the source of problems in and of themselves. Before cell phones and cell phone towers, did we have bee colony collapse because they weren't able to find their way back to the hive? No. You know, and I've been concerned for quite a long time that we don't know what we're doing most of the times in our life. Have you noticed that, Max? Like I've considered myself a perennial student, as in I assume that everything I know to be true is in fact wrong. And most of the times I've been right about being wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's impossible to know those things. And I mean, what would North America be like if we would have treated Native Americans differently? It would be totally different. I don't know how familiar you are with the history here, but supposedly before the European explorers started arriving, Indian culture, Indian being Native American culture, was actually quite a bit more advanced than it was when all of our wonderful generals and military campaigns basically purged them from our land.
Can I summarize this? Unfortunately, Max, we've come to break, and thank you for your call, but one of my favorite quotes is from Chief Sitting Bull. It goes something like this. When the white man came, we went fishing all day, and the women took care of the children, and then when we came home from fishing all day, we would make love to the women all night. Only the white man is stupid enough to think he can improve on that. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back after the break. 218-339-8525. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're going to go to a caller now, and if you want to call in, the number is 218-339-8525. So we have a caller in a 314 area code. If you'd be so kind as to give us your first name, I'd be much obliged.
Chris.
Chris, yep. And whereabouts are you calling from, mate?
Oh, okay. Well, I just called in. I don't know what the subject was. So
who cares what the subject is? We talk about conspiracies, mate, which means any subject is fair game, as far as I'm concerned. Point is, well, what's on your mind?
I do kind of find it suspicious myself that, just a few days ago, that Texas shooting happened, and I don't know for sure, but I would possibly think that, I don't know if the last reading was set up. It really doesn't seem like it was, but I would not doubt another shooting could be set up to, you know, take away our Second Amendment. And
well,
I kind of find it really troubling.
Well, we had a guest on yesterday who was talking about the Port Arthur massacre that happened in Australia, you know, one of their mass shootings, right, that subsequently was used as an excuse to take away Australian gun rights. And the guy that we had on, Andrew McGregor, is a former Victorian police officer.
Yeah, it happened in Britain. It happened in Australia. You're right, yeah.
So, dig this. His conclusion was, and I think this is one of the most important conclusions, really, in terms of analysis of mass shootings, is that they are always government involved. Always. And if they're not, it's extremely rare to non-existent, right? Here's a question for you then. Was this mass shooting in Texas that you're talking about, was it hyped up in the media?
It was at the Lone Star College, and apparently 3 shots were fired out. I heard it from RT News. I'm just like, oh, crap. Here comes more ammunition for the mainstream media to use up. That's what I was like. So, I don't think every single one of these shootings can be staged. We do have a very sick culture going on where it's constant violence, constant, like, if you turn on FX where families want to watch, you know, something for the rest of the family, right? You have American Horror Asylum or something like that, you know, just these Justified. That one dude who, what is that one show called where that guy sells a lot of dope? I forgot. Anyway, well, we have a culture based on tons of violence, and we have pharmaceutical companies that sell drugs to everyone. Like, if there's something wrong with your kid, here, have them pop a few of these. He'll act more servile, right at school, you know. And we can't just blame. I'm just saying we can't like The movie theater shootings, I think those were possibly staged, but the Connecticut shootings, I think the guy just got into a little bit too into violence, and he probably just kind of went nuts, personally. I mean, I don't see how someone who's autistic, or, well, not autistic, but, you know, has mental problems can be trained by the government to, you know, just shoot up an elementary school. You see where I'm coming from?
Well, I kind of tend to disagree in one part, and the second part is, if you're going to make an assumption on something or a theory, you got to have like a substantial amount of evidence, I believe, in order to kind of have a conclusion. And me, I just, you know, conclude that everything I think is probably wrong. So I just don't know. You know, it's my three favorite words.
Yeah, right.
But the Sandy Hook shooting has so many suspicious things to it. Like, did you hear about the guy who was tackled by the police in the bushes?
No, I did not hear about that.
You know why you didn't hear about it?
There was
a news chopper that was above Sandy Hook that captured and broadcasted, and the video's online allegedly, of a guy running away from the cops and being pounced on and detained in the bushes near the school. And then cuts to the media reporters asking the police in a press conference about that guy in the bushes that got tackled, and the police said, there's no such thing. There's no such thing, even though they have the video footage.
So, yeah, I mean, like, a van with two agents could drive by a school, shoot it up, throw a guy out, throw a machine gun out with him, and say he did it, and guns seem to be made illegal, you know? I mean, really, something like that could happen, and I do have a pretty big worry about this, because if Americans are disarmed, and a really shitty civil war does turn up in America, we're going to be demonized. Every constitutionalist, we're going to be demonized as racist, hillbilly, incest. Whatever, we're gonna be demonized, and the Acoma people of the USA are gonna buy it because they got everything they're told to believe. They don't want to think. They don't want to think about how, you know, badly they're getting fucked over. Because I guess it's better to, you know, not take that in. You know,
remember, you got to watch the language, man. We're on FCC regulated.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse my language.
It's happened twice before. I don't know what it is, but people feel like they can swear around me. I guess it's because I actually don't really give a frack. FCC does though. Now, it's funny that you should actually mention this, because I had my Facebook status this morning, bro. I just want to read it out to you. Name me one place where a gun ban was instituted where the murder rate didn't skyrocket. Secondly, name me a country where guns were banned that didn't turn into a police state.
Chicago. Over the past few years, 500 murders. And Chicago has a very tough gun laws. California, huge murder rate. Huge murder rate. All these places, New York. I mean, you walk down the street you walk back and forth more than three times, especially at night, you have the chance of getting mugged. You can't really have a gun there, you know? I mean, like New York City, and it's a proven fact. Like, places that are armed are more safe. The state of Vermont, one of the safest states in the union. You go to London, there's a huge sex trade over there. It's a pretty dangerous place, you know? I mean, you have some chick doing some jogging down the street over here, and three dudes try to kidnap her. She could pull out her little tiny 38 and shoot them. And then, you know, just, you know, this has to be claimed as self-defense. You go over there, oh, well, you put your arms up and, yeah, you're going to be put into a sex trade and probably end up in Sylvania or something like that. So
they encourage people to be victims and allow criminals to get their way. And I think this extends to, like, isn't it funny how the biggest criminal group in the country are the government, and the government encourages people to allow criminals to do what they want with you?
Yeah. I mean, Hitler said, disarm the people, you know? What was that famous quote that he had? I forgot. You disarm the people... they give up their power. Well, he had a famous quote, and he did disarm the people, and, especially the Jews first, and then the Germans, Stalin. Stalin did it.
We've got another caller in here, Chris, so if you want to finish a point or final words to the audience, if you want, before we go to him.
Well, my point is, remain vigilant about what's going on, especially everyone in the U.S. Remain vigilant. Don't go into talking about forming militias and talking about war with the government. It's still a war of consciousness that we're fighting here. We're not fighting a war, especially not yet, okay? We can't.
All right, Chris.
All right. Bye.
All right. Thanks for your call, man. All right, we're going to go now to the Greek. Welcome to the program. Before we go to you, I just wanted to put out a quote that one of my listeners on Facebook has said to me. Huey Newton from the Black Panthers said, violence is as American as apple pie. And he'd know. Most of his friends were gunned down. All right, the Greek, welcome to the program.
Hey, greetings, Vinny. Maybe an answer to a question you mentioned before about naming a place where guns were taken away and tyranny, I guess, wasn't installed. How about India, the concept of passive resistance with Gandhi? I think the arming the population was an irrelevant point with that, you know, that using that modality, let's say. The question here is, as you just mentioned before, if violence is so prevalent, so desired here, that whole Gandhi philosophy won't work.
Well, hold on a second. I think that's a deceptive example, because the British ruled India under a tyranny and banned the guns of the Indians before the Indians managed to take them over.
Correct.
So, yeah, that example doesn't wash properly. My goodness.
Really?
The boards have lightened up. Have lit up like a Christmas tree right now as well. Would you like to make one more point before we go to our next
No, that's
point?
Fine. Go open those presents. I'll talk to you later. Thanks for giving me the time.
Thanks, man. All right, we're going to go now to Kathy in California. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi, Benny.
How are you, darling?
Oh, okay. Couple of things going on here. Like Sandy Hook, they're going to destroy the school. Does that ring a bell, like Oklahoma, destroy evidence, you know? I guess they plan to demolish the school so they can get rid of, you know, so they can't track anything down. Another thing is, I was just with Ken Hildebrand on Information Nation on Orion, and on Sunday's show, he said that he spent 3 hours on the internet looking for ammo, .22s, you name it. Can't find any. And then he went around to local stores, cannot find any ammo. And what's weird about this is I remember, and I do have the album, Pat Paulson Running for President. And in that album back then, it was 67, 68, whatever it was done, said, well, we'll give everybody guns and we'll just lock up all the ammo. Interesting, huh?
That is interesting. I was just thinking, as you said that, Sandy Hook, it's about as fictional as Captain Hook.
Yeah. might as well be a hook. There's a hook here or there.
I hope it didn't exterminate people in tights. Is there anything else you'd like to say? We've got another caller on the line here, Kathy.
No, that's all I had to throw in there. And you have a good day.
You too, Kathy. I hope you're feeling better.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and we have Nathan now calling in. Is that the Nathan who called in before calling back or what? Hello, Nathan, 480 area code.
Hey, it's me again. I put out one website, the gardenpool.org, as a solution that everybody could really use. I have a website as well that's kind of in its infancy, and I would just I was wondering if I could put it out and maybe I might get some feedback and any replies to my posts. Or anything like that. Maybe I could get some stuff going.
Well, Nathan, my perspective is it's better to ask forgiveness than ask permission. You know, I was talking to Pete Santilli last night, and he kept saying, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, "Bro, don't ask me. Can you ask me a question? Just ask me the question." So, don't ask me if you can plug something. Just go ahead and plug it, mate. Go for your life. We've only got about maybe 30 seconds before we come up on the ad break.
Okay, tooltreebot.com. So tooltreebot.com, that's my website, and that's okay. What I got for you. Thank you.
Tool as in a hammer, tree as in Trinity, and bot as in robot?
No, tool as in a hammer, tree as in what I prune every day, and bot as in B-O-T as in robot or botany.
Okay. Tooltreebot, and is that .com?
Yep.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in the aquaponics and what have you, go to tooltreebot.com and give Nathan a wee bit of feedback on that. Okay, here we are. We're coming up to break. Nathan, thank you for your call. Kathy, the Greek, and Chris, and Max, and man, we've got more callers than I normally get today. Thank you very much. We'll be right back after the break, and I want to take more callers, 218-339-8525. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the final segment here for today. Caller lines are open. And it's quite rare that we actually open up the caller line, so I hope you haven't missed this opportunity. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. If you'd call in right now rather than waiting for another 5 to 10 minutes, we'll just end the segment and we won't be able to go to your calls. So call in right now, 218-339-8525. Okay. Facebook statuses. You got to love them. They're actually quite classic. I know a lot of people don't like Facebook, but I do. I love it. I love being surveilled and all of that kind of stuff. But here's the dealio. A lot of people don't want to use Facebook because they're afraid that, you know, the government or various varying degrees of scumbags we'll know what you're up to. See, me personally, I want them to know what I'm up to. Reason being is I'm a propagandist. All right. By propagandist, I mean the operative word of propaganda, which is neutral. It's just telling something with a point to try and convince somebody of a particular point of view. Black propaganda is when you use lies in order to convince people towards your point of view, and white propaganda is when you use the truth. And I had an argument with one person one day who said, isn't that racist? So, saying black propaganda and white propaganda are like the good and the evil. And I said, well, what are you talking about, man? I mean, it's no more racist than to describe a black car or a white car. It's an inanimate object. And so is propaganda. And he was like, oh, Yeah, okay. Now, moving on from that, here's my Facebook status for today. Not everything is a conspiracy. Not everything is a conspiracy. Just most things. Now, seriously, though, isn't that quite funny when you have that realization that basically the only time where you can confirm that something is a conspiracy is if you actually decide to look into it. And once you do look into it, scumbaggery has fingerprints. They're usually all over it. Whatever that thingy might be. And it's inescapable. I have a great fear that maybe I'm part of the conspiracy without me even knowing about it. Like maybe the trauma that I've suffered in my life, maybe the people that I have on this show, maybe some of the callers or things of that nature might actually be part of this great elaborate scheme that is unbeknownst to me through compartmentalization in order to promote scumbaggery through exposing it and complete and utter irony. And you know how I know that I'm not part of the conspiracy? Because I ain't getting paid. I mean, you know, at least not a decent amount. You know, bugger all sponsors. Nobody really buys the Blue Shields and things like that. I have been getting a few donations, but those are people who listen to the show who get some kind of therapy out of it, I guess. Because life's really, really hard, man. It sucks a lot of the time, and often you just need somebody to listen, or you need somebody to listen to in order to put things into perspective. Like my mate Glenn from Australia, he's working night shift at the moment, and it's like 35, 40 degrees or something in Aussie, and, you know, going to bed and sweating up the place. Not to be too disgusting, of course. And yesterday he gives me a call right after the show, and I was just like totally burnt out. Really upset, really angry, just feeling overwhelmed with it all because I'd been staying up late answering emails, I'd been getting up early, communicating and doing Skype conferences with people, doing this, that and the other, and I was just at overload. Now, Glenn couldn't help me out with any of these problems. You want to let somebody rant and tell you all their problems? As endless or as complicated or as unsolvable as they might be, that is actually what a true friend really does. Man, I don't know how to help your problems, but just, you know, let it out. Let it out. And I find that that actually solves a lot of the problems in and of itself. Just not being able to express yourself becomes a problem. Have you noticed that? If you've been in a worker situation or been in a conversation with somebody and you bite your lip because you want to say something, but you prevent yourself from saying it, and then a week later you're still depressed because you prevented yourself from saying what you were thinking. You're bottling it up. That kind of stuff's really not good. It's really not good. You know, sometimes it's bad to let it out at the wrong time or in the wrong way, but I don't know. I think they're like bad thoughts are like burps or farts. Better out than in. Maybe. Well, definitely, actually. You know what I'm saying? And I wanted to also thank the listeners. I've been receiving a few donations. Even Pete Santilli, I was whinging to him last night, and he just said, you know, Vinny, hold on a sec there. Hold on a sec. Yeah. Here's $100. It gave me $100. He's broke too. He managed to spare me that. I was really taken aback by that. And a lot of the listeners, without, I became better at the job than even the boss in some cases, and get bored and can't expand, can't do any more in that particular position. And so I move on. This job I've never had to move on to. Anything else. I have only expanded, I have only grown, I have only gained more support in doing what I'm doing. The reason for that being is the reason so many people donate and contribute to this show, is because they appreciate what I'm doing and want me to just keep it up, is all. In order to keep it up, on the other hand, you got to contribute something. Something, no matter how small. Just $1 a month, you know? $1 a month. Does that sound like an awful lot? Does that sound like something you're incapable of sparing? Or send me $12, pay up for a year. I'll give you commercial-free archives with the video versions of the shows as well. Short clips split into hours one and two and all of that jazz. Go to the archives pages at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. I meticulously do that. I have not seen in my lifetime an archives page that looks as awesome as the one that I've created at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. You've got your pictures, you've got your descriptions, you've got your YouTube videos, you've got all the audio archives and everything in decent quality formats, and that's all free. All right, and of course, as I say, there's also the commercial free versions. I don't do that because I want shockingly large amounts of money or whatever. I'm actually doing it because I want an online archive of the brightest and best thinkers and activists in this world to be in one place. So if you want to learn anything from anybody for any reason, you can go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and most likely find it. I need people's donations desperately in order to continue doing this very important role, giving these activists and commentators coverage and an archive so that people can listen to it ad infinitum until the end of time is a very important job. And I don't see hardly anybody else doing it, not in the way that I'm doing it. If you want to get important information, there's many, many places you can go to get it. But if you want that information in a format that is fun, where you can have a few cackles and laughs and stuff like that, maybe get deeply philosophical about it, it's very, very rare, if not non-existent, in the way that I do it. And I really do, again, I hate to drone on about it, but I can't do it without your support. So please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate something, anything, or subscribe for a regular amount every month so I've got something to work from, because I don't like begging. I really don't. I only do it if I really, really have to, and I've just been kind of forced into it because of financial pressures in recent times, and I really can't continue doing this without some form of support from the listening audience. Thank you very much for those who've already contributed, and thank you to those who will soon. See you again sometime.